Hello, welcome to our program on careers. I'm Irene Lubin, a volunteer reader for Sun Sounds of Arizona. I would like to begin today's program with an article which appeared in the Wall Street Journal, a recent issue. The title of this article is "The Secrets to Making a Good Virtual Impression, So Important in Today's Work World." This article was written for the journal by Andrew Brodsky. Our careers increasingly depend on coming across well on Zoom calls and in emails, but what are the rules for doing that? We all know the rules for creating a good impression. Smile, make eye contact, have a firm handshake, and make small talk. But all of these rules go out the window when we go into the virtual world. You cannot make eye contact in an email or grasp anybody's hand on a Zoom call. And it's easy to make bad impressions that are tough to correct. For example, people may think you're rude or indifferent if you keep flicking through tabs or typing during a video conference. Still, making a good virtual impression is becoming a crucial part of many jobs today, whether it is video conferences with sales contacts and global teams, or even just sending out emails to coworkers who sit a few cubicles away from you. More and more today, our careers are depending on how we follow subtle rules and cues of communication in a medium where the rules are not obvious. Fortunately, as I discovered in a review of 124 research articles with Haley Blunden from American University, virtual impressions can be every bit as rich and positive as if you were standing in the same room with the others, if you avoid critical pitfalls that can make the other person think you don't care about the conversation. So here are a few strategies that are broadly applicable to anyone, whether you're a new intern or a Fortune 500 executive. First, say too much rather than too little. In a work context, silence can do a lot of damage. If you stay quiet during a video meeting or don't send somebody emails for a long time, they might begin to make negative assumptions about you, such as thinking you don't care about the job or for them. So it is better to err on the side of saying too much rather than too little here. Stanford researchers found that business leaders who undercommunicated were nearly 10 times as likely to be criticized in leadership evaluations than were those who overcommunicated. The leaders who didn't say as much were seen as less qualified and less empathetic. It is easy, of course, to ensure that you don't undercommunicate. On a webcam, you might just rephrase the other person's comments occasionally. I like where you are going with X to show you're paying attention to them. With email, it might mean sending follow-up notes or check-ins more frequently than you otherwise might, along the lines of, I'll review everything and get back to you soon. You will come across as more engaged and make a more favorable impression. Point out your effort. Erring on the side of over-communicating helps to avoid another pitfall here. With notes or with video, people cannot see how hard you're working. This means that they start to assume that you're not working hard enough. Managers, for example, sometimes think remote workers are less productive than those are in the office. You can get around this problem by giving people plenty of updates on what you're doing. Instead of sending a customer or your superior a single weekly note about your progress, send shorter, more frequent ones. Not only will you make it clear to them that you're working throughout the day rather than completing all of your tasks right before a deadline, but you also will get more chances to share your knowledge and build relationships. Speed is not paramount. Showing engagement doesn't mean you need to respond ultra quickly to emails, though. 8 studies of over 4,000 people found that email recipients, on the average, overestimate how quickly a message sender expects them to reply. It takes a delay of about 1 day to bring negative reactions, and certain situations require quicker responses, such as when there is an impending deadline or an urgent issuer. Pick your moments for emojis. Like me, at some point you've probably found yourself in the middle of a text or email exchange about work, pondering on whether you should add an emoji here. Maybe you are trying to soften a criticism you wrote or to show excitement for someone's accomplishment. But will you hit the right note or will you look silly? It depends on what you're trying to get across to the person. A series of experiments with participants from over 30 countries showed that including emojis can sometimes create an impression that you are less professional, but excluding them can make your communication feel sometimes rather cold. For example, if you want a new subordinate to feel welcome during your first interaction, smileys and exclamation points will make you seem more approachable, if somewhat less professional, anyway. If, on the other hand, you want to impress a recruiter during the interview process, then keep your notes emoji free. If you're unsure of the right approach here, look to the other person in the conversation. If that person's messages are full of smileys, then go for it. But if not, don't bother to include them, please. Mimic the person you're talking to. Taking cues from your conversation partner, can boost your virtual impression in other ways as well. If your boss has a number one mom mug in the frame of her camera, for example, it might be useful for you to add a couple of family photos to your office that are visible in your video background. If the person that you're talking to uses informal language and makes lots of pop culture references during a conversation, you might want to follow by doing the same. To this point, a study found that interviewees who included signals of a political affiliation that was similar to their interviewer, such as a poster on the wall that reads, "Proud Democrat or Republican," were rated as performing more than 13% better during the interview than somebody just signaling for the other party. Just be careful, though, especially these days, to bringing politics into the equation. And in any case, use the shared interest strategy only if you know the other person's interests. Otherwise, you could end up doing more harm than good. For example, someone who hates sports would be less likely inclined to want to build a stronger connection with you after they see your office background is full of sports memorabilia. Simply put, we like and we trust people who are like us, and mimicking other people's conversational styles helps to establish an impression of familiarity and trustworthiness. In one experiment, researchers looked at a simulated job contract negotiation over instant messaging. The candidates and the recruiters who engaged in language mimicry, using words and jargon similar to the other person's, such as, you know, and in place of, you know, get better on better terms on the deal by more than 30%. The CCing can really hurt. Watch out when using CC and BCC in your emails. It can send negative messages you don't intend. For instance, it might seem like a good idea to regularly include your manager on email chains to keep him or her in the loop on projects. But other people on the chain might start to think you don't trust them and then think less of you. Studies of the U.S., U.K., and Chinese employees show that regularly CCing the boss can slash in half the degree of trust that coworkers feel toward the sender. Similarly, other research has found that email return receipts, which indicate the sender when an email has been opened, can create negative impressions. To the sender, it seems like a way to reduce ambiguity about whether or not a message has been received. And to the recipient, however, read receipts seem like an invasion of privacy. When feelings are running high, skip that video. Video is a great choice when you want to communicate authenticity to other people, but can very easily backfire in emotionally charged situations. I conducted 3 studies testing email, phone, and video communication for making a positive impression of authenticity in situations like relaying bad news or negotiating or asking for a raise. And I discovered that modes of communication that convey a lot of detail about your emotions, such as videos, are the most effective but also the riskiest. Consider those viral layoff videos where the executives end up talking about how difficult the layoffs were for themselves. They are trying to seem sympathetic, but usually they convey the exact opposite when coming off as self-centered and uncaring. Or consider a video call to congratulate an employee on a promotion. One of the person's coworkers feels some ambivalence. That person also applied for the job, let's say, and accidentally grimaces. That revealing look may create a worse impression than not congratulating the coworker at all. So in such cases, it can be better off to choose audio. Phone calls or video with webcams off seems higher effort than email or text, but conceals nonverbal reactions. So if you have to use email, though, there are ways to make it seem more emotionally authentic. For instance, provide a reason for choosing a note instead of calling or video chatting, such as, "I hoped I had to email you as soon as I heard, as I'm so excited for you, but I definitely want to talk more later." For everyday messages that are not particularly complex or emotional, though, there are generally no downsides to sending off a straightforward note that is all business. So if it seems overwhelming to straighten out about all these factors, there is some good news here. When interacting with longtime coworkers, the choice of which mode to use and how you communicate matters less. Your communication partners have already formed their impressions of you, and they will be less likely to misinterpret your virtual communication. And so, opting for email is less likely to hurt their perception of you, even in emotionally charged interactions. The next article that I would like to read for you today is from the Wall Street Journal of December 18th. Laid off workers stay on. This article was written for the Wall Street Journal by Tae-Ping Chen and Lindsay Ellis. Some companies are giving employees advance notice of their layoffs so that they can start looking for a new job. Chris Penner, who is a 42-year-old technical writer in Cleveland, Ohio, knows his last day on the job is December 29th. The software company where he works told him so back in April. At first, Penner was puzzled by the supersized notice that his job was going to be eliminated, but the advance warning had given him more than time to look for his new position, which Penner said he appreciates. He is still in job search mode as his end date draws closer. Penner and many other workers facing termination are experiencing a different kind of corporate cutting these days, layoffs with a long runway that can take weeks or even months to finally come to pass. Wells Fargo and Disney are among large employers that have done some long goodbyes instead of more traditional ones, which are abrupt, in which the laid-off workers learn that they are cut and leave on the same day, often escorted out by security. The old way protected companies from security problems or lost clients as laid-off workers walked out the door, and workers had little recourse. But now employers are trying to appear transparent and compassionate when cutting people, several executives and leadership consultants are saying. Companies cannot lay off people on the quiet anymore, said Sarah Rodehorst, who is chief executive of Onwards HR, a software platform that helps companies with legal compliance during employee terminations. Whatever they do is much more under a microscope these days. They have to hold themselves to a much higher standard. And avoiding a backlash. Demand for white-collar workers has taken a big hit this year as companies acknowledge they overhired during the pandemic and job openings dry up. The tightening job market means employers are piling on layers of new requirements and lengthy additional rounds of interviews for a few coveted jobs, dragging out the hiring process as they grow more selective about whom they bring on. Layoffs that are seen as insensitively done can spark backlash on social media, with laid-off employees venting online and circulating internal details, says George Penn, who is a managing vice president at Gartner, which advises companies on staff restructuring. Layoffs became not only a legal but a reputational nightmare for some organizations, he said. Federal law requires employers of a certain size to give 60 days notice to their workers when conducting big layoffs. Some companies have gotten around advance warning by paying terminated workers a lump sum to cover that period of time. Some affected employees say that they would still receive severance pay after their long layoff notice periods, though it would be reduced if they left before their designated end dates. In the Houston area, James Ridgway Jr., 40, is working at Huntsman, a chemical company, after learning back in August that he would be losing his job at the end of the year. The father of two children, with another on the way, said that the news was initially an existential gut punch. He said the long lead time has given him more time, though, to network and to tighten family finances. It's not a great place to be in, but I appreciate that I do have that runway, said Ridgway, adding that the notice helped him as he hands off responsibilities to co-workers. Ridgway, a communications manager, was still looking for another full-time job when this article was published, because his colleagues knew that he was job hunting. Ducking out for interviews was less awkward for him than feigning doctor's appointments, he said. Wade Rogers, Huntsman's senior vice president of global human resources, said giving laid-off employees months of notice showed remaining and prospective workers that the company treated its people well. That approach, he said, could help the company recruit and retain good hires in the future. Not all workers, though, want to stick around after a layoff. A Wells Fargo employee said staying motivated after being terminated was tough. She was told months before she was being terminated that her job would be eliminated. No precise date was given, making it hard for her to plan her job search. Every day you go in and you're like, is today going to be the day? She said. Wells Fargo said it periodically needs to adjust its staffing levels according to business needs. During layoffs, we always treat our employees respectfully, including giving them reasonable time to prepare, the bank said. Earlier this year, a laid-off Disney marketing executive was given 2 months' notice of his layoff. When he collected paychecks, he used the time to job hunt and made use of his employee benefits. He took his children to Disneyland free several times. I was going to take every advantage of this as possible, the former executive recalled thinking. Disney declined to comment on this. Some companies simply cannot give employees much warning, though, but some of those were trying to soften the blow. If you're dealing in an environment where you have confidential patents, or access to business plans, you just want to protect your company assets, said Tasha Mallett, who is a longtime human resources executive who conducted layoffs last year at Therabody, a wellness technology company. Mallett said that workers there were notified on the day they had to leave, but that Therabody encouraged managers to check on them and create an alumni Slack channels as people Slack an alumni Slack channel so people did not feel so abruptly cut off. Mallett herself has left the company. Companies don't want their workers to feel burned during a layoff. If anything, they want their workers to feel that they would rejoin the company if they were given a chance. Jennifer Bender managed layoffs of hundreds of people at Change Healthcare, where until the past spring, she was the senior vice president of human resources. That company had to trim staff during acquisitions and project and client fluctuations, and it also had to fill hundreds of openings a month, she said. The company decided to tell their people 2 to 4 weeks ahead of their layoff dates, she said. It felt much more compassionate to the workers, and it also made it easier to redeploy some people into other roles that the company needed to fill, which was a benefit to the company itself and to the employees who were interested in staying on. Well, longer notice periods involve risks, including security issues or unmotivated people who don't want to work during that time. Bender said the company let the employees know that performance issues could still result in corrective action, including termination for cause. That meant, she added, that it wasn't much of an issue for them. The next article that I would like to read for you today appeared in the Arizona Republic back in November. This article's title is U.S. Lags on Retirement. This was written for USA Today by Medora Lee. American systems score declines again in low global rankings. The United States retirement system received a C-plus grade again this year, but its score dropped for a second year in a row in a new ranking of global retirement systems. The United States system, which is funded mostly by individual retirement accounts, IRA, 401ks, and Social Security, came in 29th out of 48 countries, according to the Mercer CFA Institute Global Pension Index, released on Monday. Its overall score dipped to 60.4 out of 100, down from 63.0 last year and 63.9 in 2022. It was also below the overall average of 63.6. U.S. scores declined in every subcategory, adequacy, sustainability, and integrity, that made up the overall score. But the largest drag was from adequacy, which includes benefits provided by the current pension systems and design features that can potentially improve the likelihood that adequate retirement benefits are provided. The U.S. adequacy score was 63.9, down from 66.7 last year and below the 64.9 average of all countries examined, putting it at number 30 out of the 48 countries examined. The United States provides a benefit of 15.6% of the average worker's earnings for the lowest income workers at retirement, according to the Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development, the OECD data. The better systems have a figure of at least 25% of the average wage, said Dr. David Knox, who is lead author of the Mercer CFA Global Pension Index, actuary and senior partner at Mercer. So why are retirement systems under stress? As fewer people enter the workforce following decades of declining birth rates here, the imbalances between the retired and working age populations continues to grow, Knox said. This trend, coupled with increasing longevity and a prolonged cost of living crisis, will directly impact the future success of the United States retirement savings system, he said. So what steps can the United States take? Better access to retirement plans and financial education are imperative here, said Graham Pierce, who is Mercer's Global Defined Benefit Segment Leader. In the United States, only 52% of the working age population have a retirement account today, Knox said. In the better systems in the world, that figure is more than 80%, he says. This means almost every employee, whether temporary or full-time, is putting money aside for their retirement, whether it be through an employee or employer contribution, or for both, he said. The report also noted that many United States gig and contract workers have been left out of traditional retirement plans. The United States also needs to boost financial education starting back in schools, and we need to provide universal access to good quality, sound advice and guidance, Pierce said. At the moment, good quality, independent financial advice is out of the reach of most plan participants. This is all we have time for on our program on careers for today. I hope that you have enjoyed listening in and that you will enjoy the rest of your day. And thank you for listening in. I'm Irene Lubin, and I'm a volunteer reader. You are listening to Sun Sounds of Arizona.